back to the Zero to Hear podcast. I am your host, Denny Duma. Producer Carl is in the house. What's going on, Carl? Very, very good. I'd say for the first time since episode one, I'm slightly nervous, mostly because of the guest. I've been talking a big game of about Flavio for a few weeks, trying to get him on the podcast, and tonight is the night. I'm super excited.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Welcome to the show. Not that I know a ton about his background, and I'm really, really excited to learn a lot more tonight. But a quick intro to Flavio. Flavio is a musician. He is the drummer for Dallas Smith, who is honestly one of my favorite country guys right now.
Solid plug.
Honestly, yeah. I'm in love with him.
I remember it was like when I met you that day, and I said Dallas Smith, you were like, your eyes lit up. I just said to Kim, I'm like, I don't know if we can hire this guy.
Why? You love Dallas
Smith. No, I'm kidding. Yeah.
I'm looking forward to, now that you're on a big stage, I'm looking forward to hearing a little bit more about the backstory. And that's kind of what I try to get out of the podcast. So I'm excited to dig into that a little bit tonight. Okay. The way I start with all of my guests to give them a little bit of an opportunity to talk about themselves, describe themselves, is ask them to describe themselves in three words.
Three words?
It can be three small phrases.
Three small phrases. I would say, like, neurotic. Neurotic. I don't know. That sounded like you're boasting. So I go the self-deprecating way. Like, neurotic. Meticulous. And I'd like to say, like, good-natured. Like, something like that. I sometimes try to pretend. Can you swear on here? I sometimes like to pretend like I'm an asshole because I like that feeling a little bit, but I'm not an asshole. But I like to pretend that I'm one sometimes, like, you know, like the Larry David way of looking at things. That's how I kind of like would pretend that I kind of like being that honest.
Yeah. But yeah. Why is neurotic the first word that you choose?
Well, like, I think, like I was talking about, it's like, you know, being a drummer, it's kind of like, you know, you got to have a little bit of the squirrely in you, I think. It's a different, it's like I said, it's like being a goalie. You can identify with that with sports, right? It's like being a goalie. You have to just, you know, you want that pain. You know, like you want to be, it's a little different. So there's something with, like, a lot of drummers, we call it like drummeritis. And you kind of have like whatever little tics. And everybody has them, but drummers seem to have, you're either super annoying and like don't want to be around, or you have the meticulous nature that makes you, you know, I guess it's almost like self-fulfilling too, because not a lot of people know, like, what you're doing. It's like, oh, this feels good. People are dancing or do whatever, but you know what's going on. A lot of people have no idea, right? And there's a lot of like different meticulous nature with that.
Yeah.
And we can hit on that with golf too.
Totally.
How the parallel is the same.
Totally. And right. People always ask me why I like golf, and I say, I think it's good training for my career. Because of how focused you have to be on so many different things at the same time to hit a good golf shot is ridiculous. And just how mentally it fucks with you the entire round.
Oh, to think not to think.
Yeah. You could hit, like, in the middle of the fairway, let's say I have 155 yards and I'm pulling an 8-iron, hit a perfect shot. I know exactly 9 times out of 10 it goes 155 yards, and this time it goes 10 yards over the green. You're like, what the hell just happened?
So many variables, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So many variables. But yeah, it's the mental game for sure, that the parallel there for me.
Totally. Same with me. Okay, so I kind of briefly mentioned this beforehand in what I try to get out of the podcast and what I want my podcast to be about and who, what type of listener I want to attract is younger people who are either looking at self-employment as an option or who are that mindset already and in their careers, and to just kind of share a little bit of the backstory of where you come from and how you get there. So for in your career, I think there's a lot of ways that they can kind of meld together in terms of like business world versus musical world. And I want to chat with you briefly about your upbringing and how you got into music, when you got into music, whether there were some big influencers in your life that kind of pushed you into that career, or who you kind of idolized when you were growing up.
Okay. Yeah. I guess for me, it starts like pretty young. You know, I don't come from like the, like a musical family, like professionals, but music was always around. Yeah. You know, like my sister, she's 4 or 5 years older than me. I'm terrible with that. And so like, she's a good singer. And so she was like always singing in the house. Right. And like in the '80s too, like good pop, yeah. like Madonna and all that Chicago, all this good stuff. Right. That I wanted to hate, but like it was infectious. So that was always around. And then my uncle Fred, who was a big influence, he's a drummer. So he was more of my, like coming from the '70s and good classic rock and like Zeppelin and the Police. And so like, I'm 10 years old and go to school, and then again, it's like this guy likes MC Hammer, and I'm like, I love the Police, yeah. right? So, and he, yeah, he was a big influence with like his record collection, and that just was like, I don't know, that was the draw, real young.
Was it more? So your uncle, was it more of a hobby for him, or was he? Yeah, he was a professional musician.
No, professional, but okay. but he's just, you know, another meticulous natured guy, so he was just good at it, and like you know. I kind of like showing me, he understood the artistic side of it. So like, even as a kid, it wasn't about just beating the hell out of the drums and like, look at that guy rocks. He'd be like, look at that. Like yeah. that's, listen to this, and pointing out finer detail that I thought I understood that sounded so like amazing.
Yeah.
And you know, and he was also took me to my first concert, which was awesome.
What was your first concert?
My first concert ever. Was a band called Rush. You know Rush?
Of course.
Okay. So Rush and Primus. Do you know Primus is?
I don't know. Carl, do you know Primus? No, I don't know Primus.
Primus is another three-piece. And they were like really, like Les Claypool is a bass player, and he's like just a nut bar, like prolific bass player, like prolific. And just like if you check him out, but they had these really cool like thematic records, but the musicianship was really awesome. And so that struck me. They opened for Rush. And I like even remember, like, I'm like, oh, what's that? So the Pina Coliseum. I'm like, what's that smell? And I'm like 12. And he's like, yeah, you're going to grade 8 next year. You'll know. You'll find out. You know, all these early influences. And so, like, yeah, that was always an influence. We always shared, like, you know, passion for that. And it exposed me to that. And then when I got to high school, I was kind of like in the bands and in the jazz bands. And I was already playing drums by the time I got to school. So then, you know, being like in the band class, and the teacher would be like, holy, like you play drums already? And I didn't know. I didn't know where I sat. I was just kind of like a fearless kid that, you know, I think my parents loved that I played drums too, because I was pretty, you know, kind of reined me in a bit, you know, focused that energy. You know, Kim, my wife, like it's like Jack Russell Terrier energy, she says, right? You just need to exhaust this person for a little while. Yeah. But yeah, and then, you know, through high school bands, and I was more of a band guy, like coming through bands. After high school, I didn't go to music school. I thought about it, but, my road was more of like, I'm the kind of guy that like is one-on-one. I like to go to the source. I don't like to go to where everybody else is going. So, fast forwarding a bit, when I had to really get serious about like, you know, I'm like, oh, wow, I think I'm great. And then you get your ass handed to you somewhere and you're like, I kind of suck. I need to like, so that's where music school comes into for a lot of guys. And it wasn't my calling. So I started like finding like my technique teachers, and then I'd fly to New York and I'd spend time and I'd go study with them, you know, with this great teacher named Don Famularo out in just out Long Island. And, you know, he was like a technique guy and other guys around. So I kind of started doing that. I started doing private study and I got a lot out of that. Right. And then still playing in bands and always, you know, at one point in time in like my early 20s, you know, cause the advice is always, you know, you got to play and play and play and play and play, right. You got to be out there. So I was like on tour in the city for like a year and a half and I was playing in 10 bands. And nine of the 10 were paying me. And I still had a full-time job working with my uncle, my Uncle Fred. So I was exhausted, but like, you know, just knowing that each one of them was a different, you know, like when I went to apply for music school once and talked to somebody, they kind of said like, hey, we'd love to have you. But it was great advice actually. And they were like, you know, like everybody's coming out of music school wants to be doing what you're doing, right? Like you're in it, you're making money, you're on the scene, you're doing things like I was playing with like a reggae band and like a ska band, or I guess they were kind of the same, but like rock bands and singer-songwriter, things that like you kind of have to, in my world of stuff, you kind of have to have this kind of chameleon actor kind of thing. Just not to mail it in or be a phony, like not be able to identify, you know, like metalheads are metalheads and like jazz guys are jazz guys, and you know, but it just so they could broaden your spectrum and honestly understand the art of it and the craft, and to really get, you know, you start kind of getting uncomfortable, which is a good thing, right? So like in a nutshell, at that time it was like some advice was like, try being comfortable being uncomfortable. 100%. That's the way to do things, right? That's kind of like, and so I would put myself in just situations, and that looking back now, like if I never would have like BS'd my way into that situation and opened that door, who knows? Because they just kept, the doors just kept opening just because of, you know, motivation, self-motivation, right? So I just always knew that, you know, for me, school, like I had a blast in high school. Like all I did is play drums and play sports, you know, that's, and I did some studying. Yeah, so, but it really kind of carved, you know, I kind of knew that's who I was and what I wanted to do. So I thought like, I was kind of afraid to go back into school and like, you know, it just like really get immersed in that world, knowing that like, where like that advice that I got. So I didn't go that route, but I did do, you know, my due diligence in making sure that I was studied enough, and technique, you know, technique's a big thing. Like with anything you do, with any sport you need, especially any instrument, like you need proper technique to have vocabulary to speak, right? So whether it's your horn player, whether you're a vocalist, whether you're on the guitar, drums, like you need to be able to speak, right? Because that's what it is, right? So
you said so many good things in that 2 minutes that, yeah, I think we could have an entire podcast just like dissecting one of them. And I want to touch on three of them really quickly. One was, and this carries over completely into like my business real estate world, is being adaptable. So you're saying like, how can you fit into multiple genres, and certain people want to be very specific. Whereas trying not to be phony and trying to stay true to yourself, but yeah, at the same time, for me in the business setting, in the real estate world, is something that I've learned pretty quickly in my career, is that you can be yourself, but you can focus on reading what people need from you and mm-hmm. providing that. So in my world, that means some people are very analytical. Some people want all the stats from the last 2 years. Right. Some people want price per square foot. They want to know exactly all these little details, where other people, it's very emotional. Mm-hmm. And other people want you to give them your advice on value rather than giving them 150 stats.
Right.
So being able to read what type of a person someone is,
huge,
and adapt your model to that person is huge in my world. And that's kind of one thing that you mentioned in terms of being able to fit into multiple genres, right?
Yeah, I think it's like, for me, I just know I'm the type of guy that, you know, all through my life, it's kind of been like, I've always felt people are comfortable around me. Like, that's just like a thing. So I don't overthink that part of it. Like, I'm always me, and I try not to, you know, step on, read the play, you know, like I played for so many like guys that were like, you know, playing with certain female singers, and it's a whole different thing. Like when you're playing in a female environment, there's a whole different emotion, there's a whole different language, and just like, you know, and I know some girls that like are like truckers worse than dudes, and you know, like me, but I know something that's a different sense of it, but you just read the play, right? And guys are like, oh, you're gonna go play with so and so, she's terrible, oh my god, she fired me, and I would start to think like, well, I kind of know you, and you know, you're kind of a little bit of a dink, and you know, like I don't know if I'm going to be a dink, you know, or like I'd show up. And so it was never an issue with me. I like, you know, I like making people happy. And in my job, it's being in service. Like, you know, you can be in a band and you know, the four of you or five of you, and that's the thing. It's a whole different thing. But when you're like a session player or a freelance player, you're in service. You're ultimately in service, right? So somebody can tell you like, just like you, like, this is my criteria. This is what I need met. Mm-hmm. Can you provide that service?
For sure.
And you don't personalize it, and you say, yeah, I can do it, and I will do a great job. And for me, that's the green light to like, get into the role. So I look at it more like, okay, well, what do I need to bring to this certain gig or this certain, you know, session, or what I've been, the parameters I'm being given, how can I, you know, bring me and fulfill this? So that's what I love about it, right? Whether it's somebody who I work with, like you're saying, that is very like, okay, I'm very analytical. When we get to this measure, this bar, we have to do this. And it's very by the numbers. And then you get people, they're like, you know what, man, just be you, feel it. And, you know, they're talking on joints and like, you know, and you're like, oh, okay. Like that's, and you can't be too, you know, just, you can't be too guarded. You got to be open, you know, you got to be, I know what my personal, you know, reservations or who I'm inviting to my table for dinner, you know, those kind of like what I'm most comfortable in my environment, but stepping into other people's environment is like, that's the fun part of the challenge. And sometimes it's weird, you know, and you have to like, you gotta be a pro and you gotta provide that service, because ultimately, you know, there's the other end of it. It's like, you know, it's not about the money, but when there's money out there with my name on it that you've said like, this is yours, come get it, it's not going in anybody else's pocket. A little bit of a competitive thing. So it's like, you've called me first. Okay, you know, barring, you know, hurting myself, I'm going to do what I need to do to make you happy, right? And not by mailing it in just about the money. I don't want to come across that way, but that's a big part of it too, because you make yourself hireable. You know, you make yourself a lot more. And again, like this is stuff that I didn't know I was doing when I was younger, but reflecting upon it now, you know, I was like, okay, well, I'm glad I went that way. And I wasn't, you know, a young idiot and like, no, I don't play that kind of music or something.
That was my next question, is that something that is learned, or is it something that someone gave you advice along the way?
This is nice scotch.
Yeah, this is a good scotch. What are we drinking tonight, Carl?
What is it? Ostashanshan or something?
I don't know how to pronounce this one. I saw it at the liquor store. I haven't tried it before. And I've tried a lot of scotch, so that's rare. Ostashanshan is how I say it.
You can never say them. Like, I can't say Lagavulin. I can't say Glenmorangie, Glenmorangie.
Macallan is an easy one.
Lafroig, Lafroig, Lafroig. Yeah, yeah. Like, I think they're punking us. The Scots are punking
100%
us.
100%
there. Right?
Yeah. But this is, I haven't had this one before.
It's really nice. Yeah. Single malt. Okay, sorry.
Being adaptable. How did you learn that? Was it through failure? Was it through like a bad experience? Was it through someone's advice? Because that's not something people are born with. That for me, it was through one, consciously putting myself in uncomfortable situations.
Yeah, you got to do that.
You have to like pull yourself out and be like, okay, I need to improve. I'm not good at this side. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was early in my business career was public speaking. I was not comfortable in front of people, more than like 5 people. I was not comfortable in front of.
Right.
And so I consciously put myself in weird situations like that.
Does where anybody really get super comfortable with that? You just know how to do it.
You can be more comfortable.
Right.
And you can not sweat as much as I used to sweat.
Are you the Pitts guy?
100% I was. 100%. Yeah. Awesome. But is there specific situations where you either put yourself into a weird situation or learned, okay, next time I need to be able to show different sides of myself so I can fit into that
role? You know what? As with my drumming career, like as a player, I've actually kind of had this side business with the drums for quite some time, where it's like, in a nutshell, there's a service, it's called drum teching, right? And in Vancouver, we're kind of really lucky here that we have some of the like the top world-class studios on the planet. Mm-hmm. That, you know, I get to record in, like Brian Adams owns one of the best on the, like, it's amazing. Yeah. You know, there's another place called The Armory that is amazing. And so we've always had a lot of great producers and a lot of great music that's been done up here. So budgets are different. We get these big LA budgets. It's kind of the same. Like the people who do records down there and in New York and in Nashville do them up here, right? So there's more budget, and drum teching is a thing where, you know, if I backtrack a little bit, as I was coming up, another part of what I did was like, you know, as a musician or as a young guy, you're just broke, right? And so I would make a little bit of money and I would go buy more gear to learn how to play it so that I got a call for a gig. And, you know, the instrument made me sound better, made me play the part better, rather than like, you know, you just don't bring, like, you know, let's say you're going for an Italian meal, let's say, you don't bring this scotch to the table, right? Where everybody was like, which is, so you have to bring, you know, the right requirements. And for me, it was like, it helped me fit the role, play the part, right?
Yeah.
And so from that, I have a quite an arsenal of really great sounding drums, and I know how to make them sound good. So I would get brought in these situations where, hey, Flav, you know, can we hire you to bring in your drums and maintain the drums, tune them, you know, there's quite an elaborate way of getting sounds in the studio, right? Which is a whole other thing. And working alongside some of the best drummers on the planet. So that was another big part of my schooling, was not like I would have done it for free, but not only was I making ridiculous money. It's like having, getting a scholarship to go on, like, you know, Johnny Crocker's like law team, you know, like the best, you know? And so I'd get brought into these situations, and I still do, with like Bob Rock, like this mega producer, right? The guy like behind the Black Album. And he was one of the guys who first hired me, and we have some of the best, like I got to work with, like, alongside Paul McCartney's band and work with his drummer. And like the list goes on and on, rather than name drop.
That's so cool.
I would watch these guys. I would watch how the top professionals on the planet got to do this and do it. And it would, I would be constantly like, after I do my job and I'd be listening and listening back to them, you know, performing like, you know, Michael Bublé's record or whoever's record they're working on. It's like, you know, I would kind of size up and go like, well, that's, I kind of see that. Like, I'm kind of like, oh, so it's kind of like you start seeing like the little bit of the it thing. And then the little bit of like, do you have it, the thing that makes you hireable? And then like the professionalism, what you bring to the table and these situations and being a yes person. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that guy's like, he's like the best guitar player on the planet. You know, he's the best. And he's like the coolest guy,
yeah.
You know, and you know, and fast forwarding, that's always the case. The prima donna rock star attitude, demanding guy is just hiding the insecurities.
And they don't last long.
They don't, yeah, right? You don't last long. The longevity is, you know, people finding who they are, being comfortable, finally coming a piece to who you are and like bringing yourself to the table. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, going like, this is my best. This is what I'm going to do. And I'm going to try my hardest for you. And sometimes like, you know, your best is literally like the best what some of these guys are bringing, but it gave me personally like a gauge, right? And go like, and then like I would get along with the guys and like talk with them and, you know, get these great tidbits of advice. So that's how I started, you know, I'd get these mini boosts of like confidence mixed with, I got a lot of work to do, you know, like, you know, oh, this is so inspiring. Like, I could see myself like that. I can see myself in that same, you know, he's him, I'm me, but I totally identify with that. And then also going like, oh my God, like they're savages on their instrument, right? Like, that's why too. Because like in our world, and a lot, it's your world as well, in any world, it's like, there's always somebody who's better at what you're doing, right? 100%. It's just about like, you know, nobody wants to hang around with a dink. Nobody wants it. Like, you can't tour like I tour with somebody who's hard to work with. You get canned, right? So either you have that or you have lots of learning to do. And some guys, I will give them credit. I know guys who got fired and have turned it around. And basically, we fired you because not because your playing sucks. It's because you're a dink,
yeah.
You know, and we can't be around you. Right? Get your shit together, right? That kind of thing. And some people rise above, or some people are like, I'll show you. You don't know anything. And then that's it. You're doomed. You know, you can be the best, let's say, drummer that you've ever heard in your own basement, right? Like, that's just kind of like, you know, so hopefully I'm answering what you asked.
Totally.
I think. But it's like, for me, that's what it was. It's just making, going like, oh, these guys are adaptable. Because like, they're just having fun. And they're like, actually, when it's time to focus, they're reading each other and getting and working for the producer, providing the service. You know, they're on a top scale call and it's the best. But they've earned their way there. We've all, you know, everybody starts from somewhere, right? So, and I think at some point, you know, some other good advice that I read was that at some point, you know, when you can kind of make peace with yourself, and cut yourself some slack and go like, you know what? I've got to let go of all my idols. They're always going to be my idols. I can't be them as much as I try. I got to try and start being me. They're still going to come through you, like whatever your influences are. And even if I tried to be you right now, my hardest and do my best Denny, it still wouldn't be you, right? Yeah. So you have to kind of come and let your guard down, kind of, because you can hide behind your influences a lot, right? You can hide behind your mimic and you know, like maybe, you know, 9 of 10 people won't pick up on that, but one will, you know? And so at some point I find that it's very important to, like, you know, make peace with yourself. And if it's, you know, put the work boots on and whatever it is, but just become, and then that, you know, once you're trying to stop impressing and rather than kind of like, okay, this is me, I'm going to do my best for you. Chances are that always works, you know, in those situations.
There's so many things that you said that I just want to emphasize, mm-hmm. because I think they're really valuable for, again, bring back to the audience here of like young entrepreneurial type people, is the one that you said about being adaptable. I think that's super important. We touched on that. Being comfortable or getting comfortable with being uncomfortable,
you have to be.
Is huge.
Yeah, still
putting
to
yourself
day.
In strange situations that you're not totally sure yeah. of. Short term, you mentioned being a dink. And the way that I look at that, and I talk about this in a lot of podcasts with business people as well, is looking at your career as short term versus long term. Mm-hmm. A lot of people get into business, real estate specific, to make a quick paycheck, right? And in that, they completely give up morals and how they treat people.
And it's terrible.
And it burns them really quickly and they don't last very long. Whereas I consciously think about long-term growth. So if I am going to give my honest opinion to someone and they don't like it, I'm completely fine losing a deal or a couple deals over that, because I know in the long term they're going to value that I was honest with them from the beginning. So it goes, in my industry, it goes a lot into valuing properties. Walking into a house and someone saying, I want 1.4, and I'm like, it's worth 1.1.
Like you did with us.
And
there's always that number.
But it's never to try to get a quick sale. It's no. This is my honest opinion.
Integrity matters, man.
100%.
You know, that's like, it's some, that those are the things that like, that truly matter, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, I couldn't agree with you more.
Yeah.
You know, and for me personally, I never got into playing music to make money.
Yeah.
When I started making money, I was like, holy shit, I'm making money. Like, I'm making money at this. And now it's different because I've got a family. I've got, you know, a mortgage. I've got, so, but I've worked to a point where, you know, that this is my, I'm a tradesman, you know, like it's like how a tradesman does, like you're owner of, you know, just like a plumber. Yeah. You have your own plumbing company and plumbers, electrician, they just provide it. You're always going to hire the guy that says, I'm coming at 8 a.m. and I'm going to charge you what I quoted you and I'm going to clean up and it's going to be done right.
For sure.
You know, that's the, it's the same being in service, and you're always going to want, you know, there's drummers, musicians that are better than I am for sure. I'm too competitive to say like, no, but yeah, you know, I can do what you do,
yeah.
But in, no, I'm kind of joking because I know a lot of great guys in the same boat as I am, and I root for them and they root for me, and it's a brotherhood or a sisterhood, whatever. Like it's, but you gotta have some integrity. And if that's, you know, going the extra mile, you know, for me, it's like people show up and it's like, oh, great. You're playing people's original music and you don't know the material. It's like,
exactly. Totally.
You know,
totally.
Like, what are you doing? You know, like, oh, I got fired. Well, you didn't know the material, man.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, we didn't get paid to learn the material. Well, then that's not part of it. If you're getting 300, 400, whatever the money is, $100, it doesn't matter. If you said yes to the gig, you do the work. And like, I kind of had a real cutthroat, you know, rule for myself is that if I ever got fired off a gig because I deserved it, I would quit playing. I would quit this career, right? Because the professionalism I find is what weighs so much more, like it matters so much more than, like, if you're calling me for a gig, I'm not worried about my playing because I can play, mm-hmm. right? You're calling me because I can play. Like if you didn't like how I played or I couldn't play, I'm not getting the call. So that's already, that part's done. The fact that I can actually physically play the instrument, it's the professionalism that goes along with it. You know, I have so many, and the guys in the same, that we work a lot have, you know, it's because it's that, the professionalism, you're on time. You know, you're a man of your word. You know, the musicians, actors in the arts, they got a rap with being a little, you know, a little out there, maybe a little flaky. And it's true, right? Just like in all fields. But in if you want to stay a cut above, you have to have that mentality to begin with. I think it's hard to be taught that. You can be schooled it and be like, oh, man, why didn't I get that gig? Well, because Flav was like on time and was professional. That's why. Bye-bye. That kind of thing. And that happened. Then you got to you get schooled a bit, right? Or, you know, you really got to reflect. And because it matters. Being the integrity... And being someone's friend, when I get a gig, I don't even like talking about the money. If the manager's talking to me, it's even better. Cause it's we talk about the money and then that's it. I don't want to talk about it again. I've never been stiffed. People always pay on time. So it's good, you know, that energy goes around and you kind of attract where you go, I think, with that good energy, right? And so it's better when I don't talk to any, you know, if you're hiring me for a gig and it's you that's done that, okay, we talk about it once and it's done. I don't want to talk about it again, right? Because it's not what it's about. It should be about what we're going to do, how we're going to achieve this, how we're going to do this gig, what's the vibe, you get into the stuff that we all like doing is, you know, the art of it, the craft of it, right? So it's in any, again, if you're a tradesman, if you're in realty, if you're whatever, just be a pro, have the integrity, and you know, chances are it'll be better for you than trying to wheel and deal and nickel and dime and oh, I'm sick today, sorry, I gotta come tomorrow. You're just running the rat race, you know, and you're bound to get caught too, and it's not good, you know.
The thing that I always say about that is, I'm way more concerned about my reputation long-term than a paycheck. Mm. And that's it's just another way of saying what you're saying, right? Is be a good guy, show up on time, do the right things, be professional rather than nickel and dime for an extra few $100 in a deal, right?
And you know, it's you seen that movie, The Bronx Tale? It's Robert De Niro. It's a really good one, right?
A few years ago.
Yeah, it's really old. And there's a scene in it where they're shaking this guy down for 20 bucks. And he says don't worry about the 20 bucks. Wait, he owes me 20 bucks. It's you know what? It just cost me 20 bucks to never have to worry about him again.
Yeah.
So it just, you ate the 20 bucks for a good reason. Because you can, okay, now that guy's cut off. I know that that's out. He's never going to come to me. I know that where I stand there. And that's fine because money comes and goes, right? And I couldn't agree with you more. It's I care more about, you know, what I leave and getting called back. Mm-hmm. And chances are you know, with that rule that I have with myself, if I got fired from a gig because I was unprofessional, I would really it would shatter me. And it won't ever happen. But I'm just reflecting, I would have to be in the darkest place ever to not get it, right? If I got fired because I'm working with a crazy or something like that, then, you know, that happens, and which I never have been fired because I still will make sure that I will identify with that crazy. But, you know, I think those are the good things, you know, for any entrepreneur to have standards, to have ethics standards about yourself and to know how to provide a service because, it's crazy. I come from a long line of everybody in my family, my dad, his brothers, and you know, they all work for themselves. They all have worked for themselves. Right. So, and they're all great artisans and they're they do good work. And so you just, the example of working hard, providing good service, people being happy. It's that's what the steam engine, that's what gets going. Right. And so that recipe I find will never change. And so, you know, in today's world of, you know, everything at our fingertips and a whole other way of branding, it's amazing. But if you don't have A, which is what we're talking about, ethics and the professionalism, B doesn't matter. You know, you could almost you're who you're fooling, right? Yeah, that's how I, do you know what yep, I'm saying, totally. Right? Totally. And for me, it's just like I still don't have a proper website. It's terrible. I don't have one. My social media, I try and I go through phases and, but I am going to, it's like in the next year when I'm, you know, working from home and stuff, I'm going to do a proper thing, but I still am one of the busier guys, a couple of us in this, especially in Vancouver, and I still don't have a proper website. So, you know, I'm not to boast. I'm not trying to come across that way, but I'm saying that like, I'm just doing that mainly. I'm just word of mouth and providing a good service and trying to be a good person, you know, I think there's a lot of benefit to that, right?
One thing I said to one of the guys on our team recently who is a couple years into the industry, so like he doesn't know everything yet, but that's not really the main thing in our industry. It's being able to solve all problems, mm-hmm. knowing where to go for all problems.
Man, you guys, I've got a new respect for realtors, that's for sure.
We work a lot harder than we show on social media, eh?
It's well, and it's working along some other realtors that maybe like we're talking about.
Yeah,
that you guys are A and have the professionalism and working with other realtors that maybe don't, mm-hmm. you know. Anyway, sorry.
So one thing I said to him recently was there was something that happened. I can't remember the exact detail of what happened, but it was a mistake that was made that could have been solved through just doing the extra stuff. Yeah. And it wasn't a mistake in that it cost us something. It was just, it wasn't found out till a couple days later than I thought it should have. And right. it didn't affect the client at all because we were still going through subjects. But the comment I made to him was, you have to hold yourself to a higher standard than others in your industry. You can't look at John Smith or whoever the other agent is across the table and be like, well, that guy's not really putting in the extra effort. I'm doing enough to get by.
Yeah.
With us and where we want to go long term is you have to hold yourself to a higher standard because we are the best team in Greater Vancouver. That's who we want to be, right?
Yeah.
It's not who you are today. It's where you want to get to. Someone told me a long time ago, and I don't agree with this at all, but it translates into my point.
Awesome.
You have to dress for the job that you want, not the job that you have.
Right.
And I don't agree in dress code meaning anything in terms of who you are or what you do for a living, because I feel like I dress very casual for a pretty professional career that I've chosen.
Don't judge a book by its cover.
100%. But it comes back to, do the work of where you want to go rather than where you are now. So mm-hmm. in the real estate world, if you're doing 20 deals a year, you're better than average, but it's nowhere near where I want to go, right?
Sure.
I want to get to 500, you know, like whatever number it is.
Yeah, so you've got a long-term goal.
Do the work and build the reputation for where you want to go, not where you are today.
Yeah, cheers to that. Mm-hmm. Cheers to that. Clink.
Okay, let's move on because we talked about that for a long time. But there are some really good points in there. Ooh. The only other point I wanted to say that you talked about,
yes.
to reiterate, was practical school knowledge practical knowledge versus like education knowledge.
Keep going.
For me, like I didn't get much out of education. I went to university for 3 years. I don't have a degree. Didn't graduate. Just felt it useless for what I was doing.
Yeah.
And I got so much, my background before real estate was working in bars and restaurants for my dad. Mm-hmm. And I got so much more out of seeing the back end of the business work and being in front of people and being able to learn how to talk to so many different types of people at restaurants than I did in anything that I did in school.
I think that's a parallel almost for anything.
Industry, like, right?
It's, and you know, you're better for it with going to school and like figuring it out and you know, you're a doctor, you got to go to school.
Totally.
Right? But what do they tell you? Now you're in your practice and you kind of have to unlearn what you learned, right? That's what they tell you everywhere. So it, you know, speaking in my field, I see that a lot. I see that a lot. I've seen in the past, like guys that are fresh out of school, now they feel, okay, where's my gigs? Now I'm entitled to my gigs, right? But they don't understand you got to work from a different place. And I get how it could be frustrating and it could be, and what I don't like about those schools is they hose you, right? Like a lot of schools hose you. The knowledge that you get, you come out with a lot, but it's not the hands-on stuff. It's not like you're like apprenticing, let's say, with somebody, with like a master or like, or something, you get, the schools are fantastic. So many great teachers, so many great idioms, so many great, like, it really pushes your knowledge, like your sight, like to read music properly. Like I suck at reading music. Like I suck at it. It's like a struggle, but I've built in like a guttural instinct for music that is a lot more advanced than say somebody, the average person coming from school, right? Yeah, so it's cool. It's the same kind of parallel you're talking about. You get a lot about getting it served to you, like being in a situation like, oh my God, I'm playing with Bryan Adams' backing band right now, and they're 30 years older than I am, and they're so heavy, and I've got to refrain from crapping myself right now and get the job done, right? You learn so much about that. And then the little bit of advice, like the practical stuff. So it's like, I'm not saying you don't go to school. For me personally, it wasn't my calling because like, I just knew, you know, and it's, I kind of feel bad for kids today too, because like, I know a lot of kids that did go to UBC and SFU, and but they knew in grade 11, they were going to be an accountant or whatever. And like, I didn't know. I actually was going to be a firefighter. You know, I was like, my cousin Sam was a firefighter in New West. He's like the fire chief. And I thought, that's cool. You know, like bridging the, meanwhile, knowing that like my calling, I wanted to be a musician, right? But, you know, you're not known that like, oh, you can't be a musician. Like, what do you really want to do, right? Like music is for fun and, you know, you got to have a job, right? Until like I saw this clinic that like floored me and spoke to me, right? And I was like, well, that guy's just a human being. The guy's just like a regular human. This is before social media, right? Yeah, yeah. So you had to go to the Vogue and watch like these drummers, and they did this awesome clinic, and they talk and they play and they're doing this. It's kind of like, you know, a live auditorium podcast, right?
Totally. Yeah, yeah.
And they're given the goods, right? And that spoke to me. And then I thought like, what's this firefighting business? Like, that's what I'm doing. All they're talking about is all you got to do is just bust your ass and go get it. And to me, it didn't seem hard. You know, like when it spoke to me, it didn't seem like that was a hard thing, you know? So then I had to figure out for myself, okay, what am I going to do to put myself in that situation? You know, having multiple, it's what I kind of miss about smoking cigarettes is that like, I would like do some of my best thinking smoking cigarettes at nighttime, right? Okay, what am I sucking at? What do I got to do? Do I get this? Be real with myself. Like I have a thing like, don't take this wrong, but I don't agree in dreamers. I don't agree that you should be a dreamer, because a dreamer sometimes like you kind of like will like not listen to advice. Like you look at like The Voice and the Simon Cowell things there, where people are always like, they say like, they give you good advice. Hey, you know what? You can't sing. You shouldn't sing. Go be a better singer. They come all across like, he doesn't know what he's talking about. Yeah. I'm going to show that guy, right? I don't watch those shows, but, you know, and it's like, I'm going to show that guy, right? And it's like, dude, or whoever you are, like, that's it. You're screwed. You don't see it. You know, I do believe that like, if you have a dream, like a long-term dream, you see something, you see yourself somewhere, you know, that in a silhouette type of manner in your brain somewhere, that matters. But being a realist with yourself day to day, keeping yourself in check, like feeling good for however, like you killed something, you crushed that, like that was a great take, man, they crushed it. Your peers like, that's amazing. Or, you know, you're around your influences, like in those situations, seeing the best of the best do it, where you're like inspired, but then, okay, I got some shit to do. I got to go to work, right? That, I think, matters more, being a realist with yourself than being a dreamer. Dreamers, danger. I find that's danger zone. Because, like, you're not listening. You got the blindfolds on. You're not seeing what's coming peripherally, anywhere from around you. You have to, like, what am I seeing? What am I missing? What's around? Like, you have to really finger on the pulse, I find. And that's me. Like, I like, you know, knowing what's happening, and that's benefited me. And honestly, a lot of the guys that I work with and the guys that I know, you know, that are in LA and Nashville and speaking in, you know, the world that I'm in, that's kind of what it is. Dreamers, you know, you might, you know, get that chance and, you know, become what, not Lady Gaga's a bad reference, because she's a badass and she's worked herself from, but you know, like you win the contest and you've one in 1 billion wins that dream. Right. And then you get your record deal and the record company screws you and you're gone, you know, after 2 years. But anyways, not to get negative, but just saying that that I find is that's danger. That you being a realist and that's, you know, coming back to the point of like why I didn't go to school, what like that just spoke to me to do it now. Like it wasn't like, oh, so I got to learn how to practicing. Okay. Like, so I got to learn how to like make my practicing efficient so that I'm getting a lot out of myself when I'm practicing. Okay. Got that. That guy, 8 hours a day. Okay. All right. So then I got to get that, whatever works for me. Right. You know, like, it's just like, you know, you're an athletic guy. You see people at the gym, they're like crushing themselves. They're like trying to run down the street. It's like, if you just did like 5 minutes of good, whatever practice you're doing, it's worth more than the 3 hours of terrible stuff you're doing right now. Right. So that's like another mindset to get. You gotta go deep. Right. So I found, and I do find that some of the guys that are like coming out of school and I've got their gigs, they're like, well, I'm the jazz guy. I just got my jazz degree. Why are you doing my gig? Right. Well, it's not your gig. Number one, you feel entitled that it's your gig, but I've got all this other stuff that puts me in play here, right? Not just my playing, right? So, like, does that make any sense?
100%.
You know, coming around. So, and I'm just never, maybe it's like, maybe because I'm, you know, cynical maybe or something, but I'm just dreaming danger.
When I was a kid, I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do. But through sport, I learned fairly quickly that I worked harder than most people that I knew.
Were you a captain of your teams?
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
A lot of them.
Yeah.
Football in high school, basketball in high school, provincial
hand
teams.
Egg.
Hand
egg. The one that, the ball that you throw? Not football, right?
Flav's a big soccer guy. European football.
Okay, yeah. As you were.
Okay, so when I was a kid, I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do. I learned early that I worked harder than most people I knew. I had a report card actually at a grade 9 at CP. So there was this training program in BC called Center for Performance for basketball is like the sport I played growing
up.
And at the end of the year, it was every weekend for the fall. And then there was a couple week break over Christmas and then every weekend for the spring. So my weekends were gone like yours.
Totally.
I remember the report card and it would be like shooting out of 5, dribbling out of 5, defense out of 5. At the bottom, there was comments or at the bottom. One of the bottom things was work ethic or something like that. And it was like 5 out of 5. And the only comment I got from this coach was the only reason this kid's good.
Oh, right.
Work ethic. That's it.
You know, I thought
but in my head, some people would take that as a negative. Oh, I'm not that good at basketball. I just work hard. In my head, I'm like, okay, I need to figure out something in my life that if I work harder than other people, I can be really successful at.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what it was. But to me, in my head, as a pretty rational person, I think, is that I think no matter what you decide to do, if you work way harder than anyone else in that industry, you're going to be successful.
Yeah, because like that ethic matters. Like you can go to school and learn the proper techniques for it. Like I would almost go to music school now. I would almost go to music school now to get the formal training and get all that stuff because my brain power can like, I can get it, but I'm also coming at it from a whole different place. Am I going to go to music school? No, I'm not going to go do that now. But I would, if I was going to, I would, you know? And I know what you're saying. You can learn technique. You can learn the proper way to take a free throw. You can learn a proper jump shot. You can learn a proper way to box out. You can learn the technique involved. But you cannot, like, you can't, unless you want to learn that ethic, unless you have it, you know, you're not going to, like, school won't teach you that. They'll tell you, like, you got to work harder, but do they really? Like, you know, they're taking your 50 grand, your 40 grand, and it's your money.
Honestly,
do whatever you want, right?
The way that I describe university is it's one of the best businesses in the world.
Yeah.
They screw people out of a lot of money every year. They provide information, practical information, very little.
Yeah. And that, you know, and I get some fields you need it and you got to do it and it works for everybody.
Totally.
But I just, my mom, like, you know, we're Italian. My family background is Italian, right? So like the Italian is like a lioness. The mother's the lioness, right? So it's like they run the show. And I had scholarships. I had actually some sports scholarships. I had some music scholarships to go to university.
What sport did you play?
Basketball. If you look, I was a baller as well. But I was like, same as you. Like I could like, well, I had some money. Like I had a bursary for some basketball, right? But it was all around. I got the one scholarship that was like, you know what? We believe in this kid. We're going to give him some money. He's going to do something. It was kind of like open-ended. But a lot like you, I was the same kind of athlete, right? I never had the most skill, but like, you know, I took a lot of pride in it, right? You know, playing defense and all that stuff. But anyway, so my mom was like so like pissed that I wasn't going to college. I wasn't going to, I had free money. And I actually phoned up the companies. I said, here's your money back. I'm not going to use it. Give it to somebody else. And my mom was like, it was like, you know, awesome. Talk about roaring. It was insane. So, and trying to like, no, it's okay. Like I've figured it out. I've got a plan, you know? And then I go and buy like a $10,000 drum set and put myself in crazy amount of debt. But that was my school. Yeah. So, you know, it was just, but like I said, I was saying before, it's like, I feel bad because like the pressure to go to university, to go to school, to feel, so but high. If you don't know what you know, like I didn't know what the hell I was doing.
Neither did.
Like if I would have followed that path, I don't, you know, and that's the kind of advice that you'd want to give young people. It's like this, like, you know, don't take the road and take my advice that I'm saying to get you out of doing anything. You lazy, you know, whatever. You got to have that, like, don't misinterpret what I'm saying, but like, if you have, figure it out, but always keep in mind that like you have to work at something. You have to accomplish something. It's just like, it's very rare that it just gets handed it to you.
For sure.
It's very rare. Like I said, like the harder you work, the luckier you get. That's so cliche, but it's a cliche because it's like fact, you know, like it's, you know, sure, do you feel like maybe your comeuppance haven't been, you're working hard, you're not getting the break, but what can you do to balance that out? Maybe you're not putting the right energy. Like, it's weird. I've had like 4 gigs that I've gotten. It's been like, I believe in putting the good vibes out in the universe, right? You put out the good vibes and the universe will recognize, you know what, he's ready. That guy or that girl, they're ready for something. And they'll give it to you. And it's up to you to like, you know, be ready. And like, okay, I asked for this. So like when I'm traveling 10 hours on a plane or whatever, and like, and you start to get a little funky, you're like, oh, this, you're like, you know what? I asked for this. So the universe gave it back. So just tread lightly and be careful what you wish for, right? Kind of thing. So it's like, you kind of have to like, you know, have that perspective as well, you know? What was my point? This happens to me a lot. I'm surprised this hasn't happened more. Well,
a lot of what you're saying is so transferable to like my world or entrepreneurial world in general, right? Because you're self-employed.
That's exactly it. It's not like
because like contract yourself out to other people. Right?
That's it. Yeah. I play drums. You sell real estate, yeah. But it's like everybody's like, how do you do it? Well, it's just a skill set that I have that you don't have, and you have a skill set that I don't have. You know, it's just the proper skill sets that you've learned to you know what inspires you to what to do, right? You know, like I said, if you're like in a band, it's a whole different dynamic, right? Because like that's like a whole other thing, right? But when you're self-employed and you're in service, that it's like, you know, people are like, what's it like? It's like, well, what do you do for a living? I'm an electrician. It's the same, man.
It's the same. Yeah.
It's the same. What do you mean?
Trying to find clients.
Well, a producer is kind of like your contractor, okay? Or your artist is like your contractor, and I'm his first call plumber. And if I'm not available, he calls another plumber. And if that plumber's not available, he calls, and same with the guitar. It's like the parallels are the same. You know, that's kind of, you know, it's just a different skill set. So, you know, it's, and I find that, you know, you want that, you got to go get it. And you have to find out, don't be a dreamer. Like, don't, whoever's listening to this, don't like, I'm not squashing anything. I'm just trying to say like, be real with yourself, have dialogue with yourself, keep yourself in check. If you deep down know that you're not putting in the right amount of hours or the right time of focus, but you're making excuses for yourself, stop now, pack it in and go somewhere else, because if you're just lying to yourself, like whatever puts you, you know, whatever helps you fall asleep at night, like, you know, the end of the day, you know, if nobody else knows, you do, right? I can't live with that. I can't live with like that inner demon that's picking away at me going like, you kind of sucked it a little bit. You kind of, you know, cause you know,
yeah,
you know,
it's 6:30.
Do we Yeah. Let's keep going.
We got 15 more minutes.
Yeah, we do. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we keep going.
On that point, like, I think the best thing about me, in my opinion, is that I'm my worst critic.
Yeah.
It can be so hard on myself. And a lot of people see it as a negative. I see it as the biggest positive because it's exactly that what you said. Looking at yourself at the end of the day. And for me, it's never enough. Mm-hmm. And it's a weird thing to think about or try to explain to someone because very few people actually understand what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But I'll lie in bed. It'll be 3:30 in the morning. This is early in my career. I'll have just folded 600 letters into envelopes that I'm going to door knock and drop off tomorrow morning. And I'll be like, fuck, I could have stayed up till 4:30.
Yeah, right.
In my head, right?
Well, that's drive, right? Being driven is another thing. Like, you know, can't believe we haven't said that yet. You know, I guess it kind of is all encompassing, but to have drive and to be critical, you can't like, I know guys that are so critical that it's like almost like a diss. You're like, man, that was great. Oh, I don't know. You know, no, seriously, that was good. It's like, okay. Now it's like, just take the positive reinforcement and then move with it and then keep that dialogue, you know, in if you need to. But I think keeping yourself in check and being critical is it's good, right?
I have a hard time doing that. And I'm guilty of that often, is when people give me compliments, my first reaction is I could have done more.
Sure. And that's a sign of just a good human being, right? It's probably because
people
you're
take it negatively. People see it as arrogant. Mm. And it's not coming from a place of arrogance for me. It's coming from a place of what I said earlier to one of the guys on our team is holding yourself to this standard. Even if I'm here right now, I'm 4.5 years into my career. I think I should be here or I think I can get there. And so that's always in the back of my head is I can do more.
I know what you're talking about. And I struggled with that quite a bit. Like if I'm on a gig, this is years ago, and I've come to grips with it and I've come up with a kind of a solution for myself. It might work for you. I don't know. But it's like everything could be just like perfect. And as soon as like, and like, again, it's crazy because like it's live, you're playing live as a human being. So it's the things that happen on a day-to-day, a nightly basis. Like you're playing the same set. Like with Dallas, you're playing the same set. You're going to execute and murder that show. You know, and because these people haven't heard it and you're going up and you want to make last night better than tonight. And like, so that's what it is, or else the monotony will kill you. But you have to have the drive of like doing something, you know. But I used to get so rattled if I made a mistake that nobody, all however many thousand people, don't notice, and my bandmates notice, but if I noticed it, and that's it, it was like the endorphin level would just brew, and I would feel like it fail, like a fail, and it'd be tough to recover from because I'm striving for excellence, and I'm striving for this, like what I saw my peers and the people that, you know, that inspired me do, and like, of course they mess up. They're human, right?
I was going to say, at the same time, you know that those guys, whoever you're idolizing, have the exact same thoughts, right?
Totally. And until like I was lucky enough to have these conversations with my idols, some of my idols, right? Where a lot of people don't, and they're always trapped in wonder, right? So for me, it worked, but I came up with a system, like almost like a batting average, right? So like I give myself, and I know what it means to me, I give myself 97%. That I give myself 3% leeway because it works for me. Not like 84, because that feels not right for me, right? 84 means like, you know, like I've counted the song completely wrong and I'm going to get fired, you know? Like that's a fail, like massive fail. It's more like a little bit of grace so that I can have a chuckle, you know, and like exchange eyes with one of my bandmates. They heard something, I heard something, have a chuckle and move on. Right? There's a 3% thing. If I go below that 3%, that means that I didn't do my prep properly. I didn't eat properly. I didn't sleep properly. I didn't, you know, warm up properly. I didn't you know, have the hang that, you know, when you get being in a band or this, it's just like being, it's a team mentality. It's like, totally. It's the exact same thing. It's just like, you know, we implemented so many things like that get the show going. Like the show starts like 4 hours before anybody even enters the building for us. Right. That's how, cause to, you know, sex, drugs and rock and roll, it's very rare. You know, nowadays, like it's just not there. Some people can, but in my world of it, in a professional setting, it's not there. You're pulling more from like what you get from, you know, I don't drink before I play. I don't drink as I'm playing. It's like, there's nothing, you know, you're going as you, right? As you've prepared. So I just know that if I drop below that kind of grade, then shame on me because I haven't prepared properly to do this, but that 3% I will chalk up to being a human in the moment. Right. And then that allows me to go like, oh, can you believe I like blew that stop sign or like, you know, like did something or like, you know, if I fumble on a stick and like, oh shit, or like something, you know, something's happening. It's fine. And just like my bandmates and my friends will do the same in that situation. You know, because that's what makes, and it's so funny, like if you're at a show and we train wrecked the beginning of a song and we had to stop, the crowd loves it. It's crazy, you know, like, yeah. whoa, because it's real. It's happening right now.
Does that happen?
Oh, it's very rare, but yeah. It does happen. On Dallas's gig, it doesn't happen. It's like every so often it might happen, but it's like, you know, that gig becomes like a pretty well-oiled machine, right? Like we go into a lot of rehearsal, a lot of production. You got to rehearse with the lights for a week before you can rehearse for, you know, like it's a whole different thing. But like my gig that I got tomorrow night, it's all heads up. So like there's bound to be like something, but that's the unknown. And that's, you know, giving yourself I give myself maybe a little bit more grace there, right? Because then you're playing something and, you know, the band leader will like, hey, like speed it up. Okay, we'll speed it up. No, it's too fast. Then you slow down. They're like, hey, we're going to do this. Like there's always so much reading that's going on, right? But I don't know. It might work for you, like giving yourself a little bit of like a, you know, quote unquote, like a batting average. If you're batting inside this average, then you're okay. Your season's good. You're not blowing tires here. Like you're not, you know, the owner's not going to come down and say, we got to trade. You know, that's how I look at it. I look at it in that manner. So as long as I, you know, and I know what I want to, you know, what I have to do as part of my job. And I know what I have to bring to the live show. And I know, but also, you know, we have that inner dialogue. And for me, the worst thing to be doing when I'm playing is to be thinking about me playing.
100%.
Because then you're out of it. 100%. The more you're thinking about yourself, the less connected you are to what you're doing, right? And it's like, that's a big one to anything. Like people are like, oh, like in your monitors, like, you know, we wear the monitors, like the headphones, and like, that's how we listen to each other. It's like, you know, I'd love to hear what your drums sound like in those monitors, these $2,000 in-ears. And it's like, I'm not in my monitors. Like I don't have me in my monitors. I have like the tiniest bit of reference so it feels right. But the rest, I have the other guys. Because if I don't want to be listening to myself, right? Because if I'm listening to myself, I'm just trapped inside myself, right? And then like everything's too forensic and everything's too, you know, rather than like being a musician, listening is the big skill, right? Having that conversation through your instrument, like hearing what the guitar is doing, hearing what, you know, especially vocalists, you got to hear what Dallas is doing, right? You got to play with, and in all that situation. So it's like that applies, I think, a lot too. Like, don't be trapped inside yourself, right? And that comes, I think, with being comfortable enough to do that, to let go of being trapped inside yourself, you know, for however that may resonate with you, you know. It's just like the less thinking, it's awful when I'm thinking about myself playing drums as I'm playing drums in front of like 15,000 people. I'm like, this sucks. Like, why am I listening to myself? You know, like what am I doing that's so amazing that I'm listening to myself, right? Like, get out of here. You know, like listen to what, connect with something, because that's what makes it real. Yeah. And if you blow a tire, you cruise through that stop sign. I use those terms like cruising through a stop sign is like if you don't stop right. Oh, sorry. If you don't stop at where everybody else stops, right? Well, yeah, or like, you know, if you're thinking about the post show, like, I wonder where the post show pizza is from. You know, like, you know, like that's like, you're lost, you know? So that's what I mean about like more than that, like percentage that I give myself is like, that's doable. I'm okay with that because I'm a human after all, you know, like in the end, I'm a human and I'm just trying to be a good human tonight doing my job, right? But if I've like ill prepared, if I'm hungover or something like that, which doesn't happen, if I am and it affects what I do, I'm really hard on myself, like really hard. Right, like I don't let that pass. People are like, oh, listen, it's fine. It's like, oh man, like fuck. You know, it's bad. So, I don't know. That might try that. It might work.
I've never thought of it like that. I always think about like this is where I need to be. So, I need to do all these things correctly.
You have to give yourself the
mentally. I'm okay with some small mistakes along the way, as long as I learn from them and don't make those same mistakes again. But I've never thought of it as a percentage or batting average or
whatever. Just worked something. Just I give myself a little bit of grace, and it's actually helped a few of my bandmates out too.
Yeah,
you know, because we all kind of struggle. Like if you're cut from the same rug, you know, everybody's kind of like, you're not gonna, you know, be a good entrepreneur on your own if you don't have the kind of those qualities and like the ones that were resonating. Mm-hmm. Even though we're in the same different fields, you know, same kind of things resonate the same.
Yeah.
You know?
We'll start wrapping up. I know you're ready to go. For every podcast, I'll just like write down a few notes and like ideas of where I want the conversation to go.
Okay.
This was so good that I didn't use any of them. So
it's drummeritis.
I think we're going to have to have you back in the new year because there's a lot of stuff that I want to know.
Sure.
But the comment that I want to make before we kind of wrap up is social media for me in the last year has been unbelievable.
You guys are great with your social media.
Personally though, mentally, been awesome because I can be exactly who I am and not really give a shit what
people
think. I get
that from your social media. I don't give that. You're not pouring it on. You're not
I am. Yeah. It is what it is. If you don't like it, too bad. It's my show kind of thing, right?
Yeah, 100%. That's what it is. It's
the stuff that you're talking about and the stuff that I want to know more about, like what happens before a show, pregame routine is what I call it from sports, right?
Yeah.
Like you said, 4 hours before the show you're preparing.
Totally.
What goes on in those 4 hours?
For me?
Okay. And I think that's a long conversation, so we won't talk about it today. Like upbringing, like how you got through the negatives in your career, how you got through the hard times, sleeping on floors, eating shit, doing gigs in shitty bars or, you know, stuff that you don't want to do.
Over food.
Exactly.
Like any true musician would do.
That stuff is so powerful.
Yeah.
And that is what social media is for me, is sharing your story.
Right.
This is my story. This is what I do on a daily basis. Pre-game routine would be so cool behind the stage. Like if you're doing little Instagram videos behind the stage with Dallas or with the guitar guys or whatever, just being like, this is what we do before we go out and play in front of 40,000
people. I can give you a quick rundown if you want. I can give you one now. It wouldn't take long. Like in a Dallas show, it's kind of like, it's a brotherhood right there, right? Like we're all really good friends. And, you know, it was very apparent quick when we were like playing one of our shows and it didn't come off right. And I went to our band leader, who said there's a band leader, who's Darren, the guitar player.
Yeah.
And, you know, a drummer is kind of like a band leader as well, just because our job is like we drive. Nothing goes unless we go. You kind of cut from that same thing. It's like we're home base for everybody, right? Mm-hmm. Just like a goalie is, right? And it's like, man, like that show, we played okay? He's like, yeah, but something was missing. And it was the hang, the camaraderie. So we figured out in our dynamic that, you know, being around each other was part of the hang, right? Was part of the thing. It's like full boys club in that band, you know? We're literally time warped to being 15 years old again, you know? It's just jokes and razzing and farting and like all that stuff that you do as an adolescent male that bonds while you're in these packs of young boys. Like that's what you do as a kid, whether it's through sport or whether it's through whatever, right? And so for us, it's a matter of like, we sound check and like, ooh, we wake up, we have a hang, whatever, sound check. Everybody kind of breaks away for a bit. Dallas is always obligated to do some kind of interviews and stuff. We implemented a 6 p.m. Buspresso. So Dallas bought this amazing espresso machine for the Buspresso, for the bus. And so we implemented 6 p.m. No matter what you're doing, we start at, I would make espresso for everybody, right, on the bus, pick some tunes, get into it. I even would send out like some of our production assistants to get like biscotti from the local city.
What's a go-to pregame song that you listen to?
Well, this is
Give
it.
Me then one or two.
Well, when we get into the dressing room from the bus, you know, my ritual is a little different. Like I would do some yoga, especially day of show.
Yeah.
Clear my mind, get some yoga happening, get all the muscles relaxed because, you know, 90 minutes every night. Make sure my food is proper. You know, I even had like the local caterer have a pregame PB&J for me ready to go.
That's awesome.
Just like that's the creature habit in me, the meticulous in the detail, right? It wouldn't break my game if it didn't, but it's just the comfortable thing, right? And so when we break from Buspresso and we go to the dressing room and there's like maybe 2 hours before, an hour and a half before the show, we start all kind of warming up, show clothes come on. I have like a little rig inside the dressing room that I practice on, and I travel with like a Bose or a something. And we got into a long playlist, but we do not go on stage unless we listen to Aerosmith. It's like Aerosmith, Living on the Edge, Dude Looks Like a Lady, like get it rocking. It's just part of it. It's cathartic. You just see it in everybody. Yeah. It works for what we do. We hit that, and then then we are all comfortable. Then the manager comes and or our tour manager, somebody will say, okay, 5 minutes to show. We get our ears in. We walk to stage. I have a ritual with everyone. I have a certain handshake with everyone before we go on. Yeah. And then as long as that's done, it's good to go. And we're fine. If it's, you know, if you break that chain, it just doesn't feel right. Whereas different camps, different people like see each other on stage. You know, and that's fine. That works for, but in Dallas's camp, we're actually like, we're all really good friends. And like, there's no drama and we all enjoy everybody's company and we're always talking shit. And it's like, we're a bunch of dudes, but brothers, like just razzing. And some of the brothers are, you know, we'll gang up on the other brothers and like, but not in a bad way. We're just like, and everybody doesn't take themselves too seriously either, which is good because, you know, then the sense of humor is like, it's everybody's open. Yeah. If you can laugh at yourself, then you can laugh at anybody, right? If you can't laugh at yourself, then you kind of can't laugh at anybody else, right? So you have to kind of, in that camp, that's what
works.
But if
you can't laugh at yourself, you're a dink and you're out of the band.
Yeah.
There you go.
Why are you so special?
Exactly.
Like, I make fun of myself all the time and it feels fun.
Yeah.
You know, it's good. So that's in a nutshell. Like that's what goes on.
So what I was getting at though was using social media. Now you're saying you want to get into it more in the new year.
Yeah.
That's the kind of stuff that people want to see. They want to see.
But you know what? I'm a private guy. I don't, that's the thing. I'm
a
little older than you.
You're a musician.
I'm a little older than you though, right?
I know.
That's why. I don't identify with it as much because it's just like, I'm almost, you know, a little too like, you know, I almost like the mystique of why rather than so you know. You know, like I almost like that, you know, why is he getting the call for that? Flav's on that gig? I didn't even know he was in town. You know, I almost like that there's the insider world beyond social media. If you look at my social media, it's just about work. That's all it is, right? There's a few personal things or something that's funny that like, but I understand how beneficial it is. I think because, I don't know, it's being comfortable with it enough too, right?
Do you know who Bishop Briggs is?
I don't.
Okay, she is kind of...
I was going to say, who's he?
No, she.
Sorry.
So I saw her for the first time, had no idea who she was, at Bumbershoot in Seattle this year.
Oh, cool.
In September, I think it is. And she was really good live. And so downloaded her album right away as soon as the next day or whatever. And really liked her music. It's kind of rocky, poppy stuff. And her social is very good in terms of it's all business, but it's a lot of behind the scenes stuff. It's like kind of what she does leading up to shows, some pregame interviews that she does, and she's really good at it. And as a result, her brand is just growing exponentially social. And I don't know what she's at now. She's maybe at like 100,000 or 120,000 followers. So not like big in terms of music world, but in terms of someone who's newer in the industry. And as she walked on, or after her first song on stage at Bumbershoot, she like stopped the music and said, you know, it's so humbling to be here. She was on the main stage right before the headliner.
That's amazing.
And she said, 2 years ago, I was on the smallest stage in the corner way over there. And there was like 40 people watching me. And now there's 4,000 people here.
I love that.
Before the headliner. And she's like, it's a dream come true. I'm just loving what I'm doing.
Yeah. Cause she was a realist.
100%.
Not
and she was herself.
Yeah.
Right. And it was cool. Anyway. So I,
you know what? Dallas is so good at social media.
Yeah.
And his, so we're in it all the time. Yeah. Like, if you've ever gone golfing with Dallas, it's terrible.
No, but I want to.
We will. We will. We'll go. And he has a great charity that you should be a part of. You guys should do. You should book spots for it. It's the Boys of Fall.
Yes. Spot. Okay. Yeah.
You should,
advertise on JR a lot. Right?
They do. Yep. And it's an amazing charity. And it gets, every year, it keeps getting better and better. And it's an awesome thing to be a part of.
Okay.
But his social is so good because he is him. He is him. That's a wrong sentence. He is him. He is he. You know, like what you see is what you get. And that's what identifies with a lot of his fans. Like he is honestly the same when he's had dinner at my parents' house than like when he's on stage. He's the same guy. And so I get that the realism, and he's just honest and it resonates, but he involves us in a lot of his social media, right? Because it's the boys club.
Totally.
It's a lot of boys play. So if you're golfing with him, he won't ever put, one time he put a beauty three wood shot that I had at Redwoods, tagged this, and he actually posted, because usually it's the shanks and it's like, he condemns you to the cross of social media, yeah. Right? I'm going to get him to listen to this. He's going to laugh his ass off. But he's so good at it. But for me personally, I will get better at it because I, like, you know, I'm going to work from home. The opportunity that I have with the house that I bought is that I'm going to have a studio that works from home. And I know how beneficial that is in the modern day. I also think, like, who the hell wants to know what I'm doing?
I do. And I know thousands of people that do.
It's like, you know, I was like, really, you want to know what I'm doing right now? Really? Like, that's a piece of me that
honestly, like, man, the pregame shows, what you guys are doing before the show, people would eat that stuff up.
It's, you know, I forget because, like, it's so normal to us and, like, totally. We're living in a normal world there in that bubble that when we do, like, even family and stuff, like, I bring them back and they're like, and they're cool. Everybody's all cool. Like, you don't bring anybody who rocks the boat. We can't, right? It's like, you know. Circle of trust thing, right? Because like, you got to read the play there too, right? We've had situations where like, kind of like had to text your manager and say like, hey, can you bounce so-and-so? Yeah. Like they're fucking with their shit, right? You know? But I get what the mystique all it is. And like people like, you know, like not getting you side stage. I know that it's a cool perspective. It's a cool perspective to see that world and every, you know, I remember like even my early days of touring, like we'd be in festivals somewhere. Everybody's going mental for you because you're on the other side of that fence. It's like, hey, yo, like I'm broke and sleeping on my parents' couch. You know, I still live at home, man. Like I'm not special here, you know, but I could never grasp like or like identify with that. Like what's this? Like even when I met some of my peers and some of my idols and be like, oh, he's just a dude, you know, you get that, or he's just a person. Very rare, like you get starstruck. Some people have that magnetism though. You're like, whoa, like that's heavy. Mm-hmm. Like that is a heavy vibe right there. Somebody like with that thing, you know, that aura. But it's like, I forget that a lot of people do, and they want to know, like they want to be attracted to that. Like, whoa, man, he's on the other side of the fence. Like, wow, like, what's it like back there? It's like, I remember, like, I made a joke once when I took my dad for the first time on the tour bus. We rolled through town, and I was like, yeah, like, come on the tour bus, right? And he's, like, walking around. He's like, what? That's it? Like, you sleep in this thing?
Your dad.
Yeah. And he's like, yeah, what the? He's like, is this thing even safe? It's like, because you literally crawl into like a bunk. It's like a coffin, right? He's like, oh my God, there's like no windows here. And like, I'm like, what'd you think? I remember saying, like, what did you think? It was like, people think it's like a goddamn slip and slide on here. It's like clowns and a party and snow cones. And like, you know, it's like, this is it. You know, it's not glamorous a lot of the time. So sure, you get comforts, you know, as you keep breathing, there's different comforts, there's better budgets for things, but that's what makes me think, like, why would you want to know this? Like, why would you want it? Why would, you know, but I can see why, right? So maybe I will take you up on it. Maybe I will take like a social media class from you or something.
We can talk more about it.
Okay.
Okay.
I will.
I always wrap, well, I'm starting to wrap up with, for lack of a better name, and if you have a better name, feel free to express it. Carl's still working on the name. The fire round.
The fire. Oh, I was going to say like 21 questions or no, something.
It's like 5 or 6 questions.
I find that I'm terrible.
Really quick
these.
Answers. They'll be fun though.
Okay.
Okay. So largest crowd you've ever played in front of.
Actually, largest crowd I've ever played in front of is gotta be. Oh, I've played in front of a couple big ones. Boots and Hearts, you know that festival out in Toronto?
Yeah.
I've played, that was like 55,000.
So crazy.
Another one in Vietnam was huge with a big rock band I played with. That was huge too. I think I want to say like I was like 47,000. Communist too. That was interesting. That's another story. Going through a government inspection before you play your set. That's a whole different thing. Yeah, Boots and Hearts I think is the biggest. 55,000 or something like that. Yeah, your balls drop on that one.
A lot of adrenaline there.
Max adrenaline.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What city has the craziest fans?
In Canada?
I'll give one Canadian city and then one worldwide.
Well, touring in Europe is a whole different animal. So I'd say Germany's awesome, man.
Yeah.
Oh, it's an awesome country. They got it together over there. And like, the way they receive music and want to be part of music, they're pretty fun. There's something about the Maritimers.
Yeah,
they bring the party. They really bring the party. Cavendish, that's another big festival that we play with Dallas. And we're playing a big New Year's Eve show there. I think in Moncton, like that's, they bring the party. But you know what? Some of the BC crowds, specific with Dallas, have been off the hook. Like the Sunfest show that you had.
Sunfest was so much fun.
The Merritt show was insane. Like,
yeah.
So I, you know, Canada on par is pretty, we're pretty lucky here. Everybody lets their guard down. In the rock world of things, see, this is why I suck at this. I keep going. So I'll leave it there.
This is why you're great at this, though.
Yeah, I'll keep going. But there's some American markets that are pretty banging. I haven't been to Australia, and I heard that that's, and we're going to Australia, but I heard that's pretty banging there, too.
Cool. What's one myth about being a rock star?
One myth about being a rock star?
Something people think.
There's so many. But it's like, number one, not rich. Whatever, however, like money rich, like not poor, not rich. Yeah. You know, like not, that's not the variable, right?
Okay. I like that one. What's your favorite Dallas Smith song?
Oh, man. Never been asked that. Mm. Like, what's my favorite song to play? Or I guess.
You have to play.
There's a few. This is going to sound like, I know, I got the gig. I know, I have the gig, so I'm not gloating. If whoever from that camp is listening, I'm not looking for brownie points. But it's, he's got a lot of good songs. We're kind of spoiled. Like, they're really fun to play. There's what we call, there's not a lot of turd polishing, right? Like, he's got a lot of number ones in his set, so it's fun to rifle through songs that everybody sings.
Yeah.
Every word, right? What's your favorite album? What's your favorite Dallas song?
I'm currently obsessed with Rhinestone.
Yeah, that's a big one.
It's
that's gonna do
so
some good stuff.
Good. Oh. But I have like a list of favorite. I like a lot of them. I like that one with Terry Clark.
Yeah.
One drink ago. That's an awesome one.
There's so many.
Autograph is like a good chill slow country song.
Right. It's hard
Wasting
to pick
Gas
one.
Was awesome.
Yeah, when it came out.
That's like 3 years ago now, maybe.
I'll try and say like from a personal drummer's perspective to play.
Yeah.
Like Cheap Seats is a fun one because there's like a big drum intro, even though I'm not a drum solo guy, but the drum intro works for the song and it's fun and it's rocking. There's a lot of good ones. There's like Lifted is really fun too. Something about that. That's a tough question. Cause I honestly, it sounds like very Homer of me, but I've never a country guy, right? Like I'm a transplant to this world.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, they're like, oh, you know, so-and-so Eric Church. I'm like, who's there? They're like, fuck you. What do you mean? You don't know who Eric Church is.
That was
like,
one of the things I want to talk to you about tonight, but we're
I don't
out of time,
know.
Obviously.
I'm a transplant. Just
like, yeah. What was the transition like from like heavy metal almost with your old band, right?
Everything. Yeah. It's because I can get it. You know, I'm not precious. Mm. Like good music is good music.
Totally.
And so I'm a transplant to the world. So it's like, which people really get mad at me about. Like I know some other drummers that are like screw you, man.
They're just jealous.
Yeah, you're just coming
it's insecurity
in here, right?
For them.
They're razzing
someone's
me more about
their
it.
Job.
That's a hard one to pick, but I'd say like the few that we named there, those are, you know, fun.
Okay.
Fun to play.
This one was from an Instagram message.
Oh, yeah? What? See?
You probably can know who it is.
Is it Lucas?
No. He said, do you think Roma will win the Italian League this year?
Oh, hell no. Poor guy. He's going through it. Is he even saying, Alex, are you sleeping at all? The team I support is like probably one of the best teams on the planet, right?
Juventus,
yeah. And I'm not like a bandwagon. I've been like since I've been 4 years old type thing.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Okay, we talk a lot of soccer, me and Alex.
Do you?
Yeah, lots. Yeah, a lot of banter. He's a good guy. He's not like too homerish.
Sometimes he's a good guy.
Yeah, he's got it out with you. You beat him at everything. Sorry, Alex.
Okay, last one. What's one thing or a couple things you're passionate about outside of music?
You know what? I don't know how the question... Like family, for sure, right? Yeah. I'm a family man. You know, like the balance of family. I have my wife and my kids. I'm gonna have another one
almost
coming
kids,
up,
yeah.
Right? Pretty passionate about that, but I'm the kind of guy that is like, you know, that has to be in play and feel right before I can kind of like go do another hobby. I feel like, you know, like I don't practice drum. I'm not obsessed with drums and music as much as I was because it's like I'm at a place where I feel like I can call on it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't like to get rusty, and I know what I feel. But like I could play tonight and feel great. You know, like I'm not one of these guys that feels. So I like branching off into different things. So I like trying to stay. You know, I get obsessive about certain things of fitness. You know, like a couple years back, I got super into like skipping. And like cool. Obsessed about it. And like, then golf is another one, but I've had to let that go because I just golf for fun. you know, so I think it's healthy to break away from, you know, what you, for lack of better words, like what you are in a way, like what, you know, for me, music and drums, I feel it's a healthy thing to step away from, mm-hmm. You know? So I try to be inspired by new things. Like I'm lately been inspired by boxing. So I think like now that I've said it, it's going to happen.
Are you using it as fitness?
I don't watch any MMA.
Okay.
I don't, it's not my thing. Boxing. I will watch a little bit of, but I love the discipline. I identify with the discipline in boxing, the technique in boxing, the stamina, the mental fortitude. That's, I like the pain of all that stuff, right? I like doing, you know, maybe if I could grow to be a boxer and not win one round, but know that like I'm a good technical boxer. I get it. That's enough for me. It's like with golf. If you could beat me, but if I have a nicer swing than you, that's enough for me.
Do you think you have a nicer swing than me?
You know what? You got a great swing. You got a great swing. You got a pause at the top, which a lot of guys have a pause at the top,
Hideki.
Right? Right? Hideki's got a great, so it works, mm-hmm. Right? You have a really good, and what I like about your swing, your follow through is deadly. You commit. You go right through that fucking thing, man. Whereas like that's what gets a lot of guys and gets me too, right? When I'm playing free and open, I have a really nice at times. It drives me crazy that somebody's like, your tempo is wrong, because I'm a fucking drummer, you know? And that's what drives me. I've taken some lessons. It's like, you know, your rhythm and your tempo. It's like, don't. Like, that drives me crazy. But when I feel like that's enough for me, you know? It's like knowing that. So that's what the appeal of anything I get into is, I like doing it right within the, and know what, how that pertains to me personally, you know, what, how, like, I know what that means to me, you know, like I was obsessed with John Stockton's, you know, yes, jump shot.
Yes.
I was obsessed with it. You know, if I, my jump shot looked like John Stockton's, and they're like, John Stockton, like, I came from the era of like late '80s, early '90s basketball. The best, man.
That's
like,
when we were kids. That's how we got into basketball. The best. It was MJ versus John Stockton, Karl Malone, and Jeff Hornacek.
Yeah. I remember watching the bag with the Pistons, man.
Yeah.
Like, I, Larry Bird, come on. Like the Celtic team, the Trailblazers, the Showtime, the Lakers, you know.
That's, and Clyde? Clyde was that era too,
cool.
Right?
Clyde the Glide. Those, yeah. There was no bigger sport in the late 80s and those early 90s than basketball. It was the best sport. And I played a lot of them. I played hockey, you know, anything, soccer. The Juventus at that time was,
you just
like,
called it soccer.
I did, because I got to talk to you guys about it, right? If I said football, you'd think I'm throwing a hand
at you.
Got
you.
But that's man... People were like, John Stockton, really? And I got it though. I'm like, you play ball like John Stockton, everybody knows, you know, he knows, everybody knows, he runs the show eloquent, like Steve Nash, right? Totally. Like that.
Totally. So very similar. Different era,
but that kind of, like, that's the, with anything I do, you know, might be losing, but as long as I know I've done my business the right way and I know how that pertains to me, yeah, the John Stockton technical way, I love technique, right? That's why golf is a bitch. Because you have to do it 20 hours a day.
Okay, last thing in every podcast, the guest gets to make the final statement. Could be a piece of advice for, like, future musicians or young musicians, future entrepreneurs, or like the best piece of advice you got.
Okay, like, I guess under an umbrella. Mm-hmm. I put it under an umbrella, like, kind of like, you know, you, if you're in your 20s, you might not know who you are. You're going to get there. So trust yourself. And like, just be a realist. Don't be a dreamer. Really, like really keep yourself in check. Have a lot of inner dialogue. Don't be afraid to, like, dive in. Like, to, like, put yourself through, like, to, you know, challenge yourself. Like, really get into something. Be passionate about it. And work hard at it. You know, because that recipe will never go away. It has been since, like, what? Like, let's say, like, seven, the year of seven to, like, 2018, right? It just, that will never, it will never go away, right? So work hard and you know, you will, with the right kind of discipline, you'll make breaks for yourself. Things will come into play, right? If you feel like you're entitled something, or you feel like you're owed something, then chances are it's not going to happen for you, or you're going to get all the wrong breaks, because the universe is probably going to try and tell you, like, we're showing you, we're giving you a bunch of shit here and you're still not getting it, right? You know, so that's my advice. Just work hard, like, be a realist, try to be a good person. We need good people, you know, on this planet. So that would be my advice. Just if that, in my long-winded manner of doing things.
I say on a lot of podcasts is, find something you're passionate about, go all in.
Yeah.
Going all in means
without the blinders.
Being a good person, but, like, working your ass off.
Yeah. Yeah.
Totally.
I would agree. And I would cheers, but we downed our scotch, so.
And there's a little bit more.
There
Flav,
it is.
Thank you. Love it. Ending the right way.
There it is.
Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
We have so much more to talk about.
I'll come on again. So, I'm a talker. As you can't see, like, I'm a talker.
We could have like 6 or 7 episodes here. We'll get you back in
special
the
Special shout out to
sure.
Lucas, okay? Special shout
Don't
out to
do
Lucas.
Don't do that to him.
No? Why?
No. Because we need to bring his ego down, not up.
He doesn't have a big ego, does he? I don't know what he's saying, Lucas. I'm kind of whispering into the mic, so
you have to remember that he's in my boys' club, so I got to give him a hard
time.
Okay,
I get it. I got to
give him a hard time.
He was fantastic, by the way. Could call him at like 4 a.m, 3 a.m, 2 a.m. He was exactly what you said is what Lucas is and was for us. So
Don't tell him. Don't tell him. He's a good guy.
He's probably not listening now. He's like, oh, I went to Palm Springs on his money. I don't care anymore.
He's a good guy. We're really lucky to have him. He's awesome. Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
Shout out your Instagram so people can look it up.
My Instagram is FlavioCirillo7.
Beauty. That's Carl will put it on the podcast notes too. Yeah, great.
Thanks for having me. It was really fun chatting.
Absolutely. Yeah. Guys, thanks so much for listening. Hit me up on Instagram, denny.duma. Later.
Awesome. Cue the music.
There it is.